Hello and welcome to this Boehringer Ingelheim sponsored promotional podcast entitled Managing Type 2 Diabetes in the Elderly and Frail. My name is Dr. Sarah Jarvis and I'm a GP and Clinical Director of Patient.info, and I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Amrit Lamba, a GP from London, for this broadcast. This promotional podcast is part of the T2 Discussions Trending Topics series of events, which has been developed, organised and funded by Boehringer Ingelheim. Prescribing information on Tradjenta, linagliptin and adverse event reporting information can be found on the website hosting this podcast. This promotional podcast is an abbreviated version of the webinars broadcast at the Diabetes UK and Chronic Conditions Congresses in April and May 2021. To view the full video version with slides, please click on the button underneath the podcast player. As a reminder, Tradjenta is indicated for adults with type 2 diabetes mellitus as an adjunct to diet and exercise to improve glycemic control, as monotherapy when metformin is inappropriate due to intolerance or contraindicated due to renal impairment, or in combination with other medicinal products for the treatment of diabetes, including insulin, where these don't provide adequate glycemic control. There are undoubtedly specific challenges that relate to older people. Older people are more likely to be frail people. It's one of those nebulous concepts, isn't it? What is frailty? If you ask 50 different doctors, you probably get 50 different definitions. But there is an official consensus group definition, and it is a medical syndrome characterized by multiple causes and contributors with reduced strength, reduced endurance, and reduced physiological function. But more importantly, it's what those factors mean, because each of those individually and even more combined increase the individual's vulnerability for dependency, losing their independence, and of course, for death. And with age, sadly, comes an increased likelihood of frailty. 70 may be the new 50 and 60 may be the new 40 as far as most of us are concerned, but unfortunately, especially once you get into your 80s, but actually starting to increase in your 70s for both males and females, the likelihood of becoming frail, as per that definition, does significantly increase. So indeed, the International Consensus Group recommends that anyone over 70 should be screened to see if they are frail because of that significant increase, up to about perhaps 15% for females in particular in your 70s. What about diabetes though? Interestingly, when I was a girl, we talked about type 2 diabetes as maturity onset diabetes. These days we hear so much about type 2 diabetes affecting people as they are younger and younger, largely, of course, because of our ever spiraling incidence of obesity. We now are in a situation where 70% of men and 60% of women are overweight or obese, and where almost 30% of our population is obese. But among older people, there is no question that type 2 diabetes is more common. And if you are older and frail, you're at higher risk of developing diabetes and its complications. The QOF indicators have targets for assessing frailty, and specifically anybody with an HbA1c of 75 millimoles per mole or less in the preceding 12 months, they recommend, should have an assessment for frailty with a consideration to looking again at those targets if they have moderate or severe frailty. Why is it an issue with increasing age? Oh, all the reasons. And of course, all of these reasons are interconnected. The older you are, the more likely you are to have comorbidities. The more comorbidities you have, the more medications you're likely to be on. The more medications you're on, the more likely you are to have medication side effects, and the more likely it is that those other comorbidities, whether it's reduced baroreceptor function or other medical conditions, are likely to cause an increase in side effects. So these things all act together, whether it's dizziness, whether it's postural hypotension, whether it's an increased risk of hypoglycemia. All of those increase your risk of falls, which can increase your risk of fractures, which can increase your risk of loss of independence. But let's just think specifically where hypoglycemia is more likely, but importantly in addition, where people are more likely to have serious adverse consequences if they do get hypoglycemia. And if we now highlight those areas which affect predominantly older people, unfortunately they are very much skewed towards our older population. So the longer you've had type 2 diabetes for, the more likely you are to have had prior episodes of hypoglycemia. The more hypoglycemia you've had, the more likely you are to have hypoglycemia unawareness. Irregular eating habits, not at all uncommon across the whole population, but perhaps more so in older people who are dependent perhaps on others to deliver their food. And likewise, while older people may not be more likely to drive, unfortunately, they do, again, often have other comorbidities, which mean that if they, in addition, develop hypoglycemia, they are at greater risk. And if you then add in living alone, then we have, frankly, a recipe for disaster. Why are these more likely as you get older? Well, firstly, if you have hypoglycemia unawareness, you may have little or no awareness of those early autonomic symptoms. And those autonomic symptoms, the pounding heart, the feeling hungry, the feeling irritable, the feeling shaky, are what warn you that you may be having an episode of hypoglycemia, mild at this stage, and allowing you to do something about it. But in addition, if a patient has dementia, they may be unable to tell you how they're feeling. Those symptoms are very often mistaken. Older people very often feel lightheaded. When they stand up, for instance, they may feel unsteady on their feet much more often. And again, they may not recognize that this is hypoglycemia. So we know that there are significant potential side effects in addition for drug treatment. And these can be particularly problematic for older people. We know that a significant proportion of people, over 35% of elderly people, are prescribed sulfonylureas or insulin, and that's even today, both drugs which can cause significant risk of hypoglycemia. So we do need to think carefully about adjusting those glycemic targets. QOF reminds us to assess for moderate or severe frailty and to think about those targets, particularly if the HbA1c is below 75 millimoles per mole. So in summary, the elderly population is at increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes, no matter how much we hear about the increasing incidence among young people. We know there are multiple challenges faced by this older population, whether it's hypoglycemia unawareness, whether it's an increase in comorbidities, whether it's an increase in polypharmacy, or whether it's an increase in side effects to individual drugs. Older people with type 2 diabetes are commonly overtreated with drugs which have a significant risk of short-term side effects, including hypoglycemia. So we do need to be aware of the potential need to adjust our glycemic targets and to assess for frailty.
Thanks, Sarah. My name is Amrit Lamba. I'm a GP with a specialist interest in diabetes based in North London. And it's my great pleasure to be taking you through the second part of today's session, in which I'll be focusing on the management of type 2 diabetes in the elderly and frail, some key considerations really. And today I'm going to be referencing a particular medication, Tradjenta, linagliptin. This is a medication that's indicated for the management of type 2 diabetes in adults as an adjunct to diet and exercise to improve glycemic control. It can be used as monotherapy in situations where metformin may be inappropriate for use, or as combination therapy as well. Now the topics that I'm going to be discussing are going to focus on a few key areas. First of all, we're going to look at the ideal glycemic target for the elderly and frail, particularly looking at what the guidelines say and perhaps touching on why they say that as well. We're also going to be looking at how to simplify the management of type 2 diabetes in this cohort particularly looking at the clinical data surrounding the role of Tradjenta as a DPP-4 inhibitor medication to use in this group. And finally, I'm just going to give an overview of some of the practicalities of using DPP-4 inhibitors. So let's start off with what our guidelines tell us. So we know that the NICE guidance, which is due an update soon, but nonetheless is our reference point for type 2 diabetes management here in the in England and the UK, it does focus an element on individualized care for patients with type 2 diabetes, suggesting that we should be adopting an individualized approach really to tailor to the circumstances and needs of our patients. There are a lot of factors to consider. Every patient is quite different in terms of their comorbidities, whether they are experiencing polypharmacy, and also a worthy consideration of what that patient's long-term life expectancy as well. A critical point to consider, particularly given our aging population in the UK, is the presence of multimorbidity and the complexities that this may create in an individual patient's circumstances. Things such as the patient's functionality, their cognitive status, and as well any disabilities that we need to take into consideration when managing their type 2 diabetes. The ideal glycemic target for the elderly and frail is very much a balancing act. It's a balance of glycemic control versus the risks, trying to maintain the best quality of life for our patient, whilst also enabling them to have autonomy in their decision making. So it's a very tricky situation sometimes and does need quite a bit of time and discussion with our patients and also with colleagues at times as well. However, one thing that is quite interesting is that although guidelines do refer to individualization of HbA1c targets, there does seem to be a little bit of a lack of specification on what those targets ought to be in terms of HbA1c levels. So the American Diabetes Association have produced a document recently in the last few years that does explicitly state what they feel is a reasonable HbA1c goal for patients based on their health status. They've split patients who are older, perhaps experiencing frailty, into three distinct categories: those who are healthy, who have few coexisting illnesses and have a good functional and cognitive state; those with more complex or intermediate health status, as the multimorbidity and functional status tends to become a little bit more impaired and complex; and then those with very complex or poor health, where there is a significant amount of functional and cognitive impairment, and a buildup of multimorbidity as well. As we go from healthy to very complex, the suggested HbA1c goal changes from quite a tight goal of less than 58 millimoles per mole for those who are considered healthy, all the way down to a more relaxed HbA1c goal of less than 69 millimoles per mole in those with very complex or poor health. And if we look at the rationale behind this, well, it's very much about, as I mentioned earlier, the life expectancy of the patient, whether the patient is more at risk of hypoglycemic episodes, whether they're more at risk of falls. And these are very much part of the essence of how the American Diabetes Association suggests we should be looking at our patients. Here in the UK, we had a very interesting paper that was released not too long ago by Dr. David Strain and his colleagues in Exeter. And it was a collaborative paper, actually, that drew the insights from some key national figures in the world of diabetes as well, where they looked at some of the practical elements of managing patients with type 2 diabetes who are older and have frailty. Again, there is a classification of frailty status going from fit older adult all the way through to moderate to severe frailty and very severe frailty. And in this paper, they reference various validated measures of frailty, such as the EFI, the Electronic Frailty Index. And using those, we're able to categorize patients' frailty status and then look at individual HbA1c thresholds where certain interventions were suggested. So for example, the fit older adult with a threshold of 53 millimoles per mole would trigger the consideration of whether the sulfonylurea or insulin therapy ought to be reviewed due to risk of hypoglycemia, perhaps the consideration of renal dose adjustment as well. And as we go through to the more severely frail, we can see that there's recommendations, for example, to avoid glitter zones due to the risk of heart failure, again, to review the dose of sulfonylureas and to stop if below the threshold, for example, of 58 millimoles per mole in those who are moderately to severely frail. And then as we go down to the more severely frail, there is a suggestion of reviewing the suitability of insulins. So for example, NPH insulins perhaps should be discontinued and for us to consider analogs, analog insulins, where there's a lower risk of hypoglycemia. The use of Tradjenta and DPP-4 inhibitors as a whole over the last few years has gradually been increasing. These are very popular and very commonly used medications. Medications that clinicians around the country are increasingly becoming more confident in using. So we're certainly using a lot of DPP-4 inhibitors. And that's really something that I just wanted to focus on in terms of why that might be. With data for Tradjenta, there is a real consistency in terms of what we can expect in terms of HbA1c reduction in different age cohorts. So regardless of whether a patient is under the age of 50 or whether they're older and even above the age of 75, the extent to which HbA1c reduction occurs with the use of Tradjenta is quite stable. So we know what we're getting. Then as well, another consideration, particularly in this older cohort, is whether a medication is giving us the effect that it's licensed for despite deterioration in renal function. Data for Tradjenta shows that despite the level of renal impairment going from normal function all the way through to severe impairment, again we're seeing this real consistency in the level of glycemic control. So again, this is giving us a lot of confidence of knowing when we prescribe the medication what we can expect and what the patient in front of us can expect as well. Now, one of the things that I think is really worth noting and mentioning is that there is a real interest in cardiovascular disease, obviously in type 2 diabetes. We know that it is one of the major causes of mortality, unfortunately, in patients with this condition. But just over 10 years ago, there was a real drive from some of the regulatory authorities to ensure that any new medication that was brought out onto the market underwent rigorous cardiovascular safety testing. And the DPP-4 inhibitor class as a whole was really the first class of medication that was brought out into the field of type 2 diabetes that had to undergo this rigorous testing. There have been a variety of different trials that have been undertaken for a lot of the different DPP-4 inhibitors over the years. There are two cardiovascular safety trials that have been conducted for Tradjenta. Carolina, in which Tradjenta was compared to the sulfonylurea glimepiride, and then Carmelina, in which Tradjenta was compared to placebo. And between the two of those cardiovascular safety trials, more than 13,000 patients were included. For both Carmelina and Carolina, the primary outcome was defined as the time to first occurrence of three-point MACE, which is cardiovascular death, non-fatal myocardial infarction, and non-fatal stroke. So let's start by looking in a little bit more detail at the Carmelina trial. As a note, because the tests for superiority of the primary outcome, three-point MACE, and the key secondary outcome, which was the composite of kidney outcomes, in the overall population were not met, all other analyses and outcomes, including the risk of hospitalization for heart failure, are considered exploratory. So there are almost 7,000 patients included in the trial. And over 50% of the patient population in Carmelina was aged above 60. And it compared Tradjenta with placebo in patients with type 2 diabetes at high risk of cardiovascular disease and kidney events. And in both of those areas, both cardiovascular disease and kidney outcomes, we found that that Tradjenta was found to be of no increased risk. And again, that gives us so much reassurance, not only from the cardiovascular side of things, but as we're learning in the more recent years, the renal outcomes that can really have a detrimental effect on our patients' lives. So some real reassurance there from both of those elements. And something again that I just mentioned a few moments ago, there was no association with Tradjenta to have an increased risk of hospitalization for heart failure. So let's compare this to the Carolina trial, which again, we're going to focus on the older age group from within that trial. Again, as a note, as the test for superiority of the primary outcome, 3-point MACE, in the overall population was not significant, all subsequent analyses and outcomes, including the incidence of hypoglycemia, hospitalization for heart failure, and achieving HbA1c target without weight gain and without the need for rescue medication, are all considered exploratory. So, about 6,000 patients were studied, and again, almost half of those patients were over the age of 65. And in this trial, Tradjenta was compared to the sulfonylurea glimepiride in people with early type 2 diabetes, relatively early type 2 diabetes, inadequate glycemic control, and elevated cardiovascular risk. And when we looked at the primary outcome for cardiovascular events, there was no increased risk with the use of Tradjenta. Similarly, lower risk of hypoglycemia with Tradjenta in comparison to the sulfonylurea glimepiride was seen. But for me, what really stands out in this trial is some of the practical take-home messages that more patients aged above the age of 75 taking Tradjenta achieved their HbA1c target without hypoglycemia, without weight gain, and without the need for rescue medication. And in terms of practical take-home messages, that really says it all for me there. So moving on from the trials, I now want to just spend a few moments just looking at the practicalities of using Tradjenta. We know that DPP-4 inhibitors as a class are recommended by a variety of national guidelines from NICE, SINE, and the ADA EASD consensus report. As a medication to consider, particularly as a second-line therapy, and to be used as a combination with a variety of different anti-diabetic agents. When it comes to the actual use of DPP-4 inhibitors, there are certain areas that I think are worth bearing in mind. First of all, any dose adjustment required for hepatic impairment in our patients. Tradjenta does not require a dose adjustment regardless of the level of hepatic impairment. There is a lack of clinical experience with this to some extent, but the studies that we have, particularly the pharmacokinetic studies, do give us this reassurance of a steady single dose being used for Tradjenta across the different ranges for hepatic function. Also, another really important area to consider, particularly in our older population, is dose adjustments required for deterioration in renal function. And again, with Tradjenta, there is no dose adjustment required. And this, I think, not only gives ourselves as clinicians a lot of confidence, but also for our patients as well. It really simplifies the matter, and it avoids those sometimes challenging conversations of adjusting doses at a variety of different stages during the disease process. So again, a real kind of confidence building fact here that we have with Tradjenta in terms of its practical usage. And this is due to its low renal excretion. Only about 5% of its excretion is via the urine, and this gives us that stability of using the same dose across renal functions. So all in all, we've got a very kind of straightforward use of Tradjenta in a variety of different situations, particularly in those who are of an older age or have frailty, where the individualization of their treatment can sometimes become quite complex. In that situation, Tradjenta gives us some simplicity in terms of the dose required in a variety of situations. So to summarise what I've just been through, I'd just like to highlight three main points. First of all, the importance of setting an individualised glycemic target for patients who are at risk of frailty or who are of an older age, with that very fine balance between glycemic control versus risks, and also preserving the autonomy and best quality of life for our patients. And to remember that that's a dynamic process, something that we have to continually review and address with our patients. Secondly, I just wanted to reiterate the long-term cardiovascular and kidney safety profile of Tradjenta in this cohort of patients from the trials that I just went through. And finally, the simplicity of the dose of Tradjenta, which is 5 milligrams once a day, irrespective of age. Thank you very much. And I'd like to now pass things on back to Sarah.
Thank you so much, Amrit. That really sums up so many of the issues which relate specifically to older and indeed increasingly frail patients. And let's try and pull that all together or possibly bring it to life by looking at our case study. You may not have met John in person, but I'm quite sure you've met somebody awfully similar to him. John is a retired farmer. He is overweight, but not obese, with a BMI of 27. He's had type 2 diabetes since 2010. He has a history of hypertension, which is treated. He has hypothyroidism, not at all uncommon. Even more common, of course, insomnia. He has mild dementia, and he has atrial fibrillation. If we look at his laboratory results, his fasting glucose is 10.4 and his HbA1c is 75 millimoles per mole. His total cholesterol is good. It's 5.0. It's good, I would suggest, for an 80-year-old. And his eGFR is 52. So he has stage 3 CKD, stage 3A CKD. He's taking metformin, which of course is not contraindicated at that stage. He's taking gliclazide. He's taking atorvastatin. He's on ramipril 10 milligrams once a day. His warfarin varies according to his INR. And he's taking a fairly standard dose of levothyroxine on the low side, 75. He also takes zolpidem 5 milligrams once at night, which we all know will increase his risk of falls, particularly if he gets up in the night because of his BPH, which he's probably got. So let's have a look at the notes from his most recent clinic. He was seen in person, where he reported that he'd been having episodes of daytime drowsiness, and his carer had said that he has episodes of confusion. He's also been complaining of thirst and polyuria, and is getting up at night fairly frequently. Nobody seems to be quite sure whether that's BPH or whether it's polyuria at night. So he's becoming increasingly frail, and he is dependent for his activities of daily living. Again, he's 80 years old. He lives in sheltered housing, but he can only walk short distances now with a stick. He's had a recent admission to hospital where he had had a fall in the middle of the night. His blood glucose at the time when the ambulance arrived was 3.0 millimoles per litre, but he denied any preceding symptoms of hypoglycemia. Interestingly, when he then went on to have glucose monitoring during his admission, he had multiple asymptomatic hypos, so he wasn't getting those early autonomic symptoms as we see so often older patients don't. His admission thyroid function was normal, and importantly, he didn't have any evidence of a UTI to account for his confusion. So I'd like to ask you what your thoughts are next. What, if any, changes would you like to make to John's medication? Would you make no changes because his HbA1c should be relaxed? He is, after all, 80, and I would suggest he's likely to be moderately frail at least. Would you stop his gliclazide because he's got a higher risk of hypoglycemia with metformin and continue with metformin only, despite the fact that his HbA1c may go up higher? Would you replace his gliclazide with a medication which is associated with a low risk of hypoglycemia, and in particular, which aspects of his history might lead you to determine that if you were going to stop one, you would need to consider another? Or would you do something else altogether? So, John's galactoside has stopped and he is prescribed Tradjenta 5 milligrams once daily, standard dose. We know that increasing age, increasing frailty and renal disease, as well as longer duration of diabetes, and John has had his diabetes for 10 years, which is not very recent, all of those are risk factors for hypoglycemia. Tradjenta has a low incidence of hypoglycemia compared with placebo, and it's the ideal option, I would suggest, for John, who, because of his recent major hypo episode, should not be exposed to the risk of hypoglycemia. Thank you for listening to this podcast. For details of further resources available as part of the T2 Discussions Trending Topics series, please explore the other pages on this website.